Daisy was enchanted by everything in the airing cupboard, and particularly the maggots, which seemed to mean more to her than the molds and fungi. This was probably because they were moving. She was allowed to take the saucers of maggots out and play with them while the others had their meeting. "We can speak freely before her," Tess told them. "She will not have the slightest comprehension of what is transpiring." The main question was whether or not to carry through the doctoring of the family reunion tea. Jack was against this. "It's a bit different now," he argued. "There's been a catastrophe. I don't think even the sainted aunt deserves two catastrophes in one day." The others were concerned not so much as to whether she deserved them, which they were unanimous in believing she did, as to whether she could stand up to them. "If she gets hysterical," William pointed out, "or has a nervous breakdown, she might have to stop here for ages." "No, she won't," Rosie said. "People with nervous breakdowns have to have peace and quiet. I heard Fozzie say so, and she said there was no peace in this house." This was unarguable. "So, we go ahead?" It was agreed that they should, with caution. Only half the maggots would be brought into play, and a fraction of the available mold and fungi. Jack was still unenthusiastic. "We'll get into awful trouble," he said. "Only from Mother," William said. "Father'll probably slip us a fiver." "What about Fozzie? What if she goes and has a nervous breakdown?" "In that case," replied William heartlessly, "he'll probably slip us a tenner." "What are they for?" asked Daisy, delightedly watching the rise and fall of maggots. "They're a lovely surprise for Aunt Penelope," Tess told her. "They're a treat, but we want to keep it an absolute secret till the party. Can you keep a secret?" "I promise," said Daisy solemnly. "What a lovely treat! Aunt Penelope is lucky." Lunch was a makeshift and rather silent meal. Grandpa and Uncle Claude had gone somewhere on a bus, and Grandma was still sleeping off her brandy. Aunt Penelope was being very tight-lipped, which Jack thought curious, considering how often she talked about forgiving people's trespasses, though he recognized that Uncle Parker's trespassing had been of an unusually radical nature. In the background, Mrs. Fosdick was darting and muttering nonstop and making a great issue of keeping separate the vegetarian dishes from those to be consumed by ordinary mortals. "I should like to know why pigs was invented," she was heard to say, as she garnished her beautifully raised pork pies. "If not to be ate, great ugly dirty things and all the feeding they take, pigs wasn't invented just to look at, that I do know." Jack himself thought the logic of this irrefutable, and wished that Mrs. Fosdick would put it directly to Aunt Penelope. Daisy was unusually silent, and if the Bagthorpes had not been so caught up in their own conspiracies, they might have noticed this and been on their guard. If Daisy was quiet, it was probably because she was thinking, and when Daisy did any prolonged thinking, it usually boded ill. Halfway through the meal, she pushed her plate away and said, "I've finished now, Auntie Bag. Please may I get down?" "But there are stewed prunes to come, Daisy," Mrs. Bagthorpe protested. "No, thank you, Auntie Bag," replied Daisy politely. "No prunes." "Very well, Daisy, you may get down," Mrs. Bagthorpe told her, knowing well that Aunt Celia insisted on Daisy's being given a free rein in all things, to encourage her creativity. Daisy accordingly got down and trotted toward the door. "Where are you going?" Rosie asked. "I'll come in a minute when I've finished." "I'm going to sit with Grandma Bag," replied Daisy. "I love Grandma Bag." Of this they were only too well aware. A powerful and uncanny empathy existed between the pair of them. In league, they were so formidable as to have become known in the family, and with every reason, as the Unholy Alliance. After lunch, the young Bagthorpes were delegated to set out the table in the sitting room, under their mother's supervision. Aunt Penelope said that she and her children would retire to their rooms and do headlines and current affairs as usual. She did not, naturally, approve of parties, and wanted her offspring to be as little contaminated by the festivities as possible. The table laid, the young Bagthorpes retreated to the upper story to organize their saucers. Once up there, William produced what he declared to be their trump card. If all else fails, he told them, this will drive them from our doors forever. He brought out a stoppered glass vial. Rotten eggs, he told them. Worse! Who wants a sniff? They all did, they said, but were not prepared for the intensity of the stench that issued from the innocuous-looking yellow liquid. "Put it back on, quick!" Jack gasped, meaning the stopper, and Rosie pinched her nostrils and rushed from the room. "It's not poisonous, idiot!" William called. "Come back in!" "Not till you've opened the window," came the reply. "Open it wide! Oh, I feel sick!" They all did. "We're not using that," Tess told William. "Nobody'll be able to eat anything if you let that stink out." "And Fozzie's done some really good stuff," Jack said. William, who must have had much more resistance to the smell than the others, was much put out by the disappointing reception of what he considered to be his master stroke. "You lot," he told them, "are getting flabby. What's the matter with you? Come back in, Rosie." She reappeared, gingerly, still holding her nose. William dived into the airing cupboard and re-emerged with the plates and saucers, which he placed before them. "Funny," he said. "There's hardly any maggots left." They all looked. "They must have got loose," Jack said. "They must be all over the airing cupboard." A quick search failed to reveal more than a rather slow-footed spider, which was promptly bagged by Jack for his collection. "They're jolly big," Rosie said, eyeing the remaining maggots. "What if they've eaten one another?" No one present knew whether or not this was a possibility. "There's one thing," said William decisively. "If that's all the maggots we've got, we're definitely using the smell." An altercation immediately set up. In the end, a compromise was decided upon. Fate should be allowed to determine the matter. The vial was to be balanced, lightly stoppered, concealed in the floral arrangement in the center of the table. "If there's any yanking or shoving," William said, "it'll drop, and either break or the top come off." His suspicious siblings immediately saw the flaw in this arrangement. "You could deliberately do yanking and shoving," Rosie told him. "You've got to promise not to." "Swear not to," said Jack, taking a leaf out of Grandma's book. A swearing ceremony duly took place. "Though I still think you're turning yellow," William told them. "The sooner we drive the sainted aunt out of here, the better. I want to get down to being famous before any of the DB do." They all did, with the exception of Jack, and confidently awaited the outcome of the family reunion party. "Once that is over," William maintained, "it's unlikely this family will ever be united again." In this, he was to be proved not only right, but right beyond anything he had expected or hoped for. Not only were branches to be rudely snapped from the Bagthorpe family tree, but it was about to be riven, as if by lightning, clean through.